Welcome back to Plain English. I'm your host, Aaron Frisby. Well, it's been a year since we dropped that first episode. First and second episode, geez, they were harsh ones. I think they put off about 75% of listeners that tune into this one. But hey, they're real stories. It's been a year. We thought we'd do one more episode. We teased it on our social media as one more episode just to check in and see how things are. But when me and Gillis got chatting, it's quite clear that we're both in better headspaces now, and he's doing really well in life, and he's got some messages now. I mean, a lot of positive things have happened now that his story is out there, and he's doing well. So we're going to keep trucking through. Just like I mentioned, that first and second episode, they were brutal ones, and you guys, if you've got through this far on this podcast, you know that some of our episodes are, I won't call them funny stories, I'll call them interesting stories, and some of them are quite serious. So, there's always serious aspects to these episodes, but this one is more fact-based. We touch on his detox from Suboxone, and also we talk about the system that's built around trying to get people off opioids and why it's not working. So this is a great resource for people who may be in the battle themselves, or they know people in the battle. It just helps explain what they're going through and why, you know, just me who struggles to not consume sugar for 24 hours is like, why don't these people just stop doing the drugs? It's even when they're off the drugs, the next drug to stop them getting off the drugs is even harder to get off. So, that's what we touch on today. So it's an interesting one, but this is a serious podcast that can be used as a resource. I find it interesting. I mean, I started this podcast to hear some of Gillis's crazy stories. And I mean, some of it's been very educational. So this is another one of those. Today's episode is called Sunny Days After Suboxone. Hope you guys enjoy. All right, man. So how's things?
Life is good, bro. Life is good. I don't mind Campbell River. It'll be good to get back to Victoria. I'm going to be back at the end of June. But I'm working already here, so it's good.
What are you doing there?
Same thing, metal and shingling roofs.
Oh, yeah.
This is only my second day today with the guys, but they're all right. They're, you know, your typical roofing guys, but they all know what they're doing, at least. There's nobody standing around or looking silly. Can do one job and can walk away and the other guy will start doing it, or vice versa, so the roof goes nice and slick.
That's good. And then you just want to get back to Victoria, more to do in Victoria or what?
Well, there's an elder there that I've reconnected with. That was the first elder that I connected with inside. And so through the podcast, when it went to Indigenous News, his partner saw it and let him know, and then emailed Katlia, the woman that interviewed me, let her know that he wanted to get a hold of me. And so I got a hold of him, and we've been talking and stuff, and he wants me to come back to the lodge ceremonies. And so I said, okay, so I'm going to move back to Vic and do that with him.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. It's what's been what I've been trying to do for the longest time. Like, I've never really said it on the podcast or anything, but it's something I've been wanting to do since I got clean again, was reconnect with this particular elder specifically.
And was that the one you had in Victoria talking about, or was that in somewhere else?
That's when I was in Victoria. We first bumped into each other in William Head. His name's Lloyd Harella. He's an Anishinaabe elder. Yeah. And he's from back east where I'm from. When we first met each other, I walked up to him and I said, "Bonjour, I'm Anishinaabe." And he said, "Me too." And it was just so cool. And he's like, "How are you doing, my boy?" And I was like, "I'm doing good." And he put his arm around me and he's like, "How are you really doing, my boy?" I swear, bro, like, I was probably crying right then and there, but I was in the pen, so I had to be hardcore.
And was he working with people, or was he actually inside as well?
No, he's an elder. He's not an inmate. He's an elder that comes in from the community. He works through their whole contract and everything. But yeah, he comes in for his sake and for our sake.
And that was kind of what the stories were revolving around recently, the ones where you're in the media and you're saying that there should be more elders or access to elders.
Yeah, it revolves around just the whole program inside, the Pathways program, right? Like, it's not in every prison, and it's very regulated by a CSC, and they kind of decide who gets to be in it, and they also kick a lot of guys out for stuff that just there should be more control given to the elders, right? But yeah, so anyways, they got the final say in everything, right? So you can only do so much. I mean, the elders stick up for us and stuff, don't get me wrong and stuff, but at the end of the day, there's only so much they can do in there, right?
Yeah, right.
While they're second in command, and my belief is they should be first in command. Like, when it comes into dealing with people and stuff, like, I think it's getting there. Like, don't get me wrong, like progress is being made and stuff, but it just should be more available. Just put it this way, right? The indigenous population inside is easily over 50%. I don't want to say an exact number, but I tell you, like, it's at least over 50%. But as far as the general population goes out here, we don't make up 50%. We don't make up 40. We don't make up 30. We don't even make up 20. We don't even make up 10% of the population. But inside, we're more than 50% of the population. So that's the whole thing, right? Is the program's not available to all of us. Like, there's only so many people that can get into the program at one time, right?
Yeah, right. And you kind of moved to Campbell River to, I guess, I'll give it to your words. Why did you move to Campbell River and kind of get out and, I guess, reset, I guess you'd call it, would you?
Yeah, well, I was holding it together in Vic, but at the same time, I was kind of stuck, right? Like, I mean, the relationship I was in was really messing with me, right? And I had to not get away from it, but I had to just take some time away from it, but also just figure out what matters more to me. Like, I was really trapped in the emotional responses to it. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but I was constantly like feeling like I have to participate in it and react to it and fix it and take responsibility for my part in this and that. But at the end of the day, I wasn't really doing anything like, other than just trying to make it work with someone that was extremely, I'm not trying to badmouth her or nothing, but extremely difficult for us to even agree on what happened in a day. Like, yeah. I'm not even kidding. Like, she'd say one thing's happening, I'd be like, well, I don't even know. And why are you telling me 2 weeks later when I can't do nothing about it? And it was just a huge disconnect, and like, to the point where even in what reality we were both in was getting crazy. So I wanted to get away from that. And the other thing is, I wanted to get off that Suboxone. I tried earlier and ended up going back on it just because of circumstances. It's, bro, that stuff is fucking brutal, like, to say the least. Like, okay, so when I was using, I was on the streets and pretty much overdosing like every second week. It made sense for me to go on anything that could get me away from that. And Suboxone definitely increased my ability to maintain a level of sobriety, but I won't say complete sobriety, because the Suboxone really was messing me up. I'm realizing that now more so as I'm after off of it. But once I'd gotten away from the point where I wasn't killing myself, and I wanted to live a more pro-social, more productive lifestyle, as far as connecting with people and my emotions, like take work, for example. I've chilled out so much since I've just taken a break and just sorted myself out. And then the Suboxone. That stuff's super hard on the system. Like, I would have to drink a shake with like 1,000 calories in the first thing in the morning just so I didn't feel like my blood sugar was low and I just want to sleep, or I get the shakes and my mental focus, my emotional, whatever, like that depression stuff I was talking about since I've been off Suboxone, gone. Like, my feeling like I'm just, I don't know, like everything has changed. Like, anyways, but I'm getting ahead of myself. So,
well, just to touch on the Suboxone stuff, yeah. You know, you used it to get off, obviously, the harder stuff. Is that the way, you know, let's say you could do it all again, would you go on that stuff or what? Because it doesn't sound like the greatest time.
No. So, and that was the biggest reason for leaving Vic, is I knew that to getting off Suboxone was going to be a lot harder than I thought from the first time. And so I came to stay with my friend Sunny, and so that's here in Campbell River. So my relationship with Sunny, she originally was my outreach worker, and she went all the way to try and save my ass. Like, I was dropping. They were trying to get me into treatment, trying to get me into the hospital, and then finally Like, it was total fluke. I was coming up the stairs after being in downstairs of our place on Pandora Street, and I was sick. Like, I've never been this sick and wiped out before. I couldn't barely breathe. And I was coming up the stairs as she was coming into the place, and she happened to be there looking for somebody else. And I was like, Sonny, and she saw me, she's a woman. I was like, all I said was, I'm done. Take me to the hospital. And like, I meant like, I'm done. Like, I'm done with this. Let's do this. And she's sick. So she was like, good, let's go. And so she took me to the hospital and stuff. She was literally a frontline worker. She was an outreach worker. She was worked on the street level with people. She has given first aid and done breasts for people and then had them die in front of her, right? After she's Narcan and done everything she can for them, right? And all the outreach workers and the street nurses and stuff, they get attached to us because we're human beings, and they obviously took the jobs they're in because they're very caring people. But it taxes them emotionally and mentally. A lot of them end up only working for a certain amount of time, and they get a massive burnout, and some of them like end up having to go on disability and everything. Like, mentally and emotionally, it messes them up, right? Like, she's seen more people, put it this way, she's seen more people OD and die than I have, and I was the addict running around the street for years and years, just simply because she worked in the building where people came and used and stuff, right? But a lot of people would go in the bathrooms and do more dope than they should. Every 10 minutes they come, they knock on the door. How's it going? Are you good in there? You know, and then someone else wants to use the washroom. And technically, we're not supposed to be doing dope in the washroom, but they rather us do it there than somewhere else. So anyway, so me and her have been friends ever since. And so I came up here to stay with her, and I'm certainly glad I did, because, bro, I'll tell you about the withdrawals from this Suboxone, because this was the main reason I came up here from Vic anyways, was to get clean. Like, real clean, right? Like, yeah, that stuff's a hardcore narcotic. Don't let nobody fool you. Like, drug companies just keep coming out with the next thing, and they just find something else to get people wired to. Like, what they say about this stuff, word on the streets when I started was, oh, yeah, you go on Suboxone, they wean you down, and you don't get sick, blah, blah, blah. Like, fuck. First of all, I'll say this. There's no way you can use opiates of any type, pharmaceutical or from the streets, for a certain amount of time that you're now chemically dependent on it and like totally addicted, and then just stop without having to pay the piper. You will have to go through withdrawals, and you got to go through that pain and everything. There's no way not to. I've never found a way to taper this, that, trick myself down. Like, there's every time, and Suboxone was no different. So I came.
Do you know
here.
If this is this still the way that people are getting off opioids? Like, this is still being used to get off?
Yeah, this is the new way now, because the way they used to use was methadone. Methadone really fucked up people physically, mentally, emotionally too. Like, I'm not exaggerating. Like, mentally you slow down, emotionally you either go numb or it's like you're still on a super strong fucking narcotic, but without the euphoria aspect. That's it. That's the only thing they kind of remove. So you're not getting high technically, but you're fucking dope right up, right? Right? So, I mean, look at what it did for me. I was using, wouldn't stop for nothing. I was using the point I was killing myself. So it did make sense at that point to go on Suboxone, because literally people from the streets were coming to me going, twice this happened. We thought you were dead. We thought you were dead. And then I went to that Vision Quest program, got back out, showed up in Victoria again. And everyone's like, we thought you were dead. We thought you were dead. Like, I was dropping every 2 weeks, bro. Like, every two fucking weeks near the end there, I was dropping. And when I say near the end, like the last year, 2 years. Every 2 weeks, drop. And I'm so fluky, lucky, something, that every time I drop, A, there were people around, and B, there was Narcan around. Because the way I get high and the way I use is, I get high, I hang out for a bit, and then I take off by myself. I'm not a loner. I'm like a social butterfly, but I also like to take off on my little misadventures all the time when I'm high. And we'll get to those funny stories. So I come out here to get off the Suboxone. Well, the first 4 days of the Suboxone, I didn't even realize I was in withdrawals. I was in a blackout. A full-on fucking blackout, bro. I walked out of my room. I got my own little space here. We share the house. I walked out, and I was like, Sonny, fuck, I don't know if I can do this. It's only the next day. I thought I was laying in my room all night, can't sleep, got up in the morning, went out to tell her, I don't know if I can do this. It was 4 fucking days. 4 days I lost. Well, she's like, you're on day four. Like, you just, I was like, what? And the look on her eyes, she could see that I was like shocked. What the fuck are you talking about? And so she had to explain everything to me. Even telling me everything that happened in the last 4 days, not one single fucking recollection.
Jeez.
Full on, blackout, delirious. She said I was going out there. I was saying, Sonny, I got to go meet someone at the store. I don't know nobody here. She's like, who? He's like, I'll take you if you need to go, but who you need to see? I was having delusional thoughts in my head that I was going to go meet someone and buy some dope off of them and shit. And like, I had arranged it, and now I just got to go meet them. I've never even done that on heroin. I've never done that on morphine. I've never done that coming off of anything. So she has some stuff to help me sleep. So she gives me a few Valiums. I sleep for a couple of days. I get up again. I'm kind of blacked out, lost. What's going on? So I'm 1 week in now, bro. I'm so fucked up mentally that I haven't even really realized how physically sick and rough I feel. I'm taking CBD oil. I'm taking like 10 times the amount you should to try and help with the pain. I'm taking Gravol for my upset stomach. I'm taking acetaminophen. Like, I'm taking Tylenol, Motrin, and aspirin. I'm fucking everything, every non-narcotic drug I can to help me cope with coming off. And nothing is helping. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, Sonny, like, I felt so rough physically, bro. And I'm a tough cookie, and I've been through a lot of withdrawals where I got picked up. I had to sit in cells in the fucking cop shop overnight and then go to the remand center with nothing, you know what I mean, and kick it within, you know, 5-6 days. I'm back in the gym within a week, you know, not fucking full on, but I'm in there fucking starting to get going again. This year, 1 weekend, it was just starting. So now if you can imagine for the next 2 weeks, laying in my bed, every type of physical pain you can think of. So my skin, cold, wet, sweating. Fuck, bro, I was losing about 2 pounds a fucking day, just sweating everything. And I wasn't thirsty. I'm drinking as much as I could. My fucking head hurt. Like, I never had headaches like this. Like, my pillow felt like, fuck, it was made of rocks. All my bones felt like, if you can imagine, like being squeezed and twisted kind of. And Jimmy legs, I couldn't keep my legs still. I couldn't keep my arms still. They just wanted to flail, move around. Fuck everything. Fucking, can't breathe properly. My sinuses, like, I'm so mucused up. My eyes won't stop watering. I'm yawning. Every time I yawn, my eyes are watering like I'm crying. Fucking, like, everything that could hurt did my, and I never had this before either. My heart, like, she was worried. She's like, maybe you can't kick it. Maybe we've got to take you into a clinic or something. Like, she was even worried because, like, I was having chest pains. Like, literally my fucking heart, I felt like it was going to give on me. Like, and I'm not even, like, no, I've had all kinds of, like, workout pains, this, that. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't nothing to do with my ribs or nothing. It was in my chest, in my lungs, because after having pneumonia in my lungs, I had to get that surgery when the one lung got collapsed. I have COPD now, so it's not bad, but I have breathing issues. When I was going through withdrawals, bro, I could barely get air. Like, I was like, no, Sonny, I'm good. But then an hour later, I'd be, Sonny, I'm kind of freaking out. I'm like, I feel really, like, I'm not just in pain. I feel my organs. I feel my heart. I feel my lungs. Everything that could hurt, everywhere there was a fucking nerve ending, hurt, and in different ways. It was, like, painful. It was achy. It was muscle cramps. It was twitchy. Oh, man. And the thing is, you can't sleep. So it's one thing to have one day like that. It's another thing. 2 weeks in, I still couldn't sleep, bro. After the first week of being delirious and shit, the next 2 weeks, like, no sleep at all. And I was starting to get weird sleep debt again. And like, I was like, Sonny, like, if I start acting weird or talking weird, just call me on it right away. I said, I'm just kind of like drifting off. I would have like day sleeps where I wasn't sleeping, but I'd like sit on the couch with her and trying to watch TV, and like, oh, a fucking hour felt like, bro, I would look at the clock. It'd be like, fuck, pick a time, 7:10. I'd be like, and that's in the morning. I'd be like, fuck, Sonny, I just gotta, even if we can just make it to noon, I'll try and like lay down for a bit. I look at the clock, it'd be 7:40. It already felt like 4 hours went by. Like, time went so slow, an hour felt like fucking 10. Like, it was fucking mental. Like, she gave me so much credit after, because I kept saying, son, I don't know if I can do it. And she'd be like, okay, well, what do you want to do? Do you want me to get a hold of the doctor? We'll get you some boxing. But then I'd be like, no, fuck it. I'm going to keep toughing up. And you know, like an hour later, Sonny, I don't know if I can do it. Like, I just, bro, I was a mess mentally. I kept repeating myself when I would talk to her. It was like I couldn't concentrate on what was happening. I have a thought in my head and I want to tell her, I would tell her. And then like 15 minutes later, I repeat it to her again. And she'd been so patient with me. And I repeated it again. But I could tell by her face, I was like, Sonny, like, what's going on? She says, well, you told me this 3 times already. I was like, what? Like, bro, like, I've never experienced these kind of withdrawals. But now get this. About three and a half weeks in, I start feeling like I'm a little bit better. Like if I first, I finally got a few nights sleep, right? When I first woke up, if I went right away and had a hot shower and everything and had a coffee, I'd be like, Sonny, I feel a little bit better. But it only lasts about an hour and I'd get these fucking hot, cold flashes and I start to get the Jimmy legs. My legs can't sit still. You know, I'd be like, Sonny, I'm sorry. I'm flailing around so much. She's like, it's okay. I understand. This is fucking going on 4 weeks now, bro. This is happening. And it was like, I'd feel better than not. And then as soon as the physical stuff went away, so let's say like now at the end of like five and a half weeks, and I'm not exaggerating on the time frame here. Physically, I was still really rough, but like I was starting to say to her every day, Sonny, I think the worst is over. And then the next day, okay, I think the worst is over. Okay, it would just keep dragging on and dragging on. I never experienced withdrawals, dope sick this fucking long in my life. And at that intensity. So just as it's physically starting to feel better, then I fucking hit this. And it's weird. My daughter shared a post with me about this guy that was talking about Suboxone, about how you hit a second wall and you wrote it. So last time I came off Suboxone, remember, I was only off of it for a little while. And then I thought I went out and relapsed because I got in this shit. I don't mean to say her name, but anyways.
I can beep it out.
Okay. Because that whole relationship. I took off and everything and relapsed. But I remember when I took off and relapsed, it was more than that. It was like something just came over me. I felt so shitty. I got to go get high. Well, now after going through the withdrawals the second time, I think what I hit was the same thing I hit the second time. There's a second wall you hit that's like super emotional and mental, bro. Like I couldn't control my angry outburst. But at the same time, I felt so sad about like everything and anything I thought about. Like, you fucking name it. I think about you, I fucking feel sad. Like, you know what I mean? It was just, like, I said, I maybe fucked myself up when I was on Suboxone. Like I said, I seriously don't think I'm going to get better. Like, she said, no, just give it time. She was reading, well, now at this point, she's reading everything she can about Suboxone withdrawals and this and that. And she's finding out some stuff too that's supporting what I'm going through. My daughter shared this post with me. I forgot to finish that part. Shared a post with me that this guy that, you know, had gone through the whole Suboxone, he was pretty well, you know, educated anyways on how heroin even came to be. And heroin was supposed to be the thing to do instead of morphine. Like, you got to remember, heroin was invented in pharmacy, not on the street, not by, you know, anybody. And it was supposed to be the thing to do, right? And then, you know, they had that massive crisis when everyone came out of Vietnam War, I think. And so then they came out with meth or World War. In between World War II and Vietnam, so then it came out with methadone to put everybody that had war sickness, they were calling it in different things, yellow fever, but not yellow fever like you're thinking, just because these people, you can be dope sick and it's like fever, whatever. These are all slang terms. But so then they came out with methadone, but it's always the pharmacy coming out with the next thing to get people fucking wired to. And so now they come out with this Suboxone. Same thing. So this guy was well-educated about all that stuff. He talked about all that, and he talked about what happens when you're on Suboxone and what happens when you try and come off of it. And it educated me so much on it. I thought I knew a lot about it just by being on it. I thought I got first-hand experience. But I wasn't really interpreting all, and I wasn't as aware of it like from an objective point of view. I was like just subjective to it all. And he talked about how it lowers testosterone. It can cause this he described it like this dark, black, lonely place. And I was like, fuck, that's exactly what I feel like. I feel like it's coming for me sometimes when I was on the Suboxone. And he talked about that and how that happens. And then he talked about when you come off and how there's a second wall that you hit in the withdrawals, and it's extremely emotional and mental. He says most people relapse on anything or just go back on Suboxone at this point. He says this is the part that's really hard. And so he was talking about how just Suboxone, if you're on it, you should try and get off it right away. But they don't. They use it like, and that's how it should be. You go into a detox, they detox, you put you on Suboxone, and then while you're in stabilization, they should lower your, that's like a 28 days after the first week, they should take you off Suboxone. But they don't. Instead, they just leave you on as much as you want, and give you the highest dose you want. It gets crazy. Just because, I don't know why, but I can make up some reasons. One, they want, if you're not doing dope and whatever, it seems like a feasible fix, you know what I mean? Because compared to doing street drugs and overdosing and shit, it is better. At least you're alive and you're breathing. It gives you a fighting chance still, right? Anyways, fucking, I lost my fucking train of thought.
But so if you were to do it again, well, at the moment, are there alternatives?
No,
to getting off heroin? There's not. This is what people are, and obviously it's a failing cycle because. I mean, if you're having detox problems for 6 weeks, that's it. That's why people are relapsing, obviously.
There is another way to get people off, bro, but it takes a lot more real investment, but you'll get real results. But this, the powers that be, the general society, the government, whoever's involved and whoever needs to be involved, there is a way to get people off, but it involves really being involved with them. It means getting them to detox with a certainty that they're going to then go into some type of housing and treatment program. Like they're going to be able to go. People are hurt, like bad, that are using, right? Like mentally and emotionally, and there's usually mental health issues on top of it. But there's also all the physical harm we do to ourselves that fucks us up mentally and emotionally. You got to think, bro, when I started, I had all my fucking teeth. I'd never had a fucking tooth knocked out. I'd never let a tooth get fucked up on dope. Like, and physically, look at what I did. I ripped my fucking shoulder literally right off. I had my lung collapse. I had fucking three tubes going through my ribs, one pumping in medication, two sucking out fucking infection and poison. I fucking almost caved in my head, literally. I fell off fucking roofs. I got hit by fucking vehicles. I drove my bike into vehicles. I hooked myself on that garbage can and had my fucking, that thing go through my leg. And then I got an infection in my leg. My leg was so fucking bad. Everyone was telling me, you're going to lose it. And I finally get to the hospital. And they're even telling me, you know, we're going to give you medication and this and that, but like, it's not looking good. Like, I almost ended up with fucking lose a leg, bro. Like, so, but all of that really takes its toll on someone mentally and emotionally. We have to accept just those physical things that are happening to us. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of girls get fucked up teeth and shit, right? I mean, like, guys too, but the girls that I know, like, that really messes them up, right? But it's also the things that people do on the dope. I stole stuff and jacked people. Honestly, bro, I don't want to be that kind of person, but I'm not like fucking losing any sleep over it compared to, you know, my life, right? But these girls, a lot of them end up on the streets, like working, right? That's fucking brutal. Like I'm a guy, so I'm outside the box, you know what I mean? But I see what it does, right? So people need a lot of intervention, right? And they need people that are there to help for the long term and walk these people back to being well. We're out there. We're not at our strongest. We're at our absolute weakest. Like, I can't think of a person being at a more weaker state. And those people that recover, bro, are the strongest fucking people I know. Because I don't care what battle you've ever faced in your life, whoever's faced in their life, addiction, you know what I mean? Whether it's alcohol, heroin, speed, coke, whatever it is the hardest thing to overcome once you've got it. I mean, look at all the support. Look at everyone trying to help me. Until I was able to find a way to help myself, there was it controlled my life. It made me an absent father, right, which really hurt me, right? And that's another thing that every time I'd sober up, I'd think, fuck, that's 3-4 more years missing from my daughter. And that text she sent me before I lost my phone, or fucking traded it for all I know, it was a while ago. That text that she sent me, and then I didn't see her 4 years later. I clean up. My bro gives me a phone. It's an iPhone. So I sign into my fucking iCloud account, and then all my old messages come up. And there's a message from my daughter 4 years, four years previously. That's how long that last run was, saying, "Hey, Dad, are you still alive?" right? Like, holy fuck. Brutal, because I didn't answer her, right, for 4 fucking years. So it's a tough fight. So if you want to help people, you got to be ready to help them totally and get them from their weakest back to a place of good mental health and well-being. And I know firsthand that a lot of people on the streets are good people. We look out for each other. We help each other. When we don't even have nothing, we share it with each other. Yeah, there's, you know, little feuds and stuff. But, you know, and you can never trust a person that's a drug addict. They will steal. But not always, though. Like, I've sat and watched over so many people who were there totally passed out to make sure they didn't get robbed and not take fuck all myself, knowing when they got up, though, I'd get hooked up, right? Or sometimes accused of taking something even though I never did and be like, what the fuck?
So I know someone in a situation right now that has someone who is addicted to heroin that's on the streets of Victoria. And what I hear a lot of is that you can't do anything until they want to help themselves. But is there anyone, his family member, is there anything that they can do to get that person off the streets and get them clean?
Okay. Well, first thing is, it may seem like they may not want to help themselves, right? But it comes and goes, right? And so I think it's always good to try and help people, especially if you know if there's real help. But you are right. If they don't want to, they won't. Like when I wanted to use, I used. I ran away from Dennis's. I took off on my ex, Kelly. Fucking, you know, I made her drive me downtown. And she even said, so you're really going to get out and we'll get high. Like, she made it like, choose that over me. I was like, I'm not choosing it over you. It's just what I'm going to do. I got out. She didn't see me for, I think, like another 2 years. But anyways, so once I was using, I did want to get clean a lot of time, but I knew there was no real way out. Like I overdosed and would wake up in the hospital and I'd ask them, can I go to detox? Can I go to detox? And the answer was, you know, we can give you a card with their number and you got to call them. And you got to call them every day for like 4 or 5 days just before them to get to take you serious. And once they say they're going to take you, then you got to call them for another 3-4 days until they get a bed for you. Bro, no fucking addict is going to do that. No fucking addict has the presence of mind. Half the time we're so fucked up, we're thinking of, A, we got to go do another score to get more dope before we get sick. Because if we get sick, we're just going to end up laying on the sidewalk for a fucking week feeling like we're dying. So you have to. Like, you have to do something. Like, once you're wired, you have to do something. What, no matter what it is, that's why people do whatever the fuck it takes. That's why I would jack people, right? I'd be, you know, whatever, right? Like, but I would get them back. Like, I didn't manage to survive on the streets that long and keep my name inside when I'd go into jail and shit, being a fucking goof, right? I'd jack people, but I'd show back up and, you know, be like, hey, party time, here you go, right? Always give back what I took and then some. But it's still an asshole fucking move. But anyway, so back to this person, you know. So there may be times when they want to. So it's very important to maintain contact with them, but it has to be like it has to be a feasible plan. Like, it has to be something that's workable. And a lot of people, it's one thing to say you want to get clean. It's another thing to say you're going to go through the first 4 or 5 days withdrawals. That's why I say a lot of people, you know what I mean, if you can help them get into detox and get into state, but you have to try and find a way to work around that shit where they got to take on the onus of calling them every day and getting themselves in there. Like, as far as I know, someone can't speak for you. Not even an outreach worker couldn't do it for me. And say, hey, detox, get them a bed and we'll get them there. They didn't even have the power to do that. I only managed to get in there because I was in the hospital. I was in the hospital for like a month with that infection in my lungs. And so I was asking the doctors and the nurses and everybody every day. I was like, listen, when I leave, and I managed to finally win them over with my charming personality.
Yeah. And is that detox service free? Because I know you hear a lot about these things being real expensive and things like that. So get them into that.
Like, that's Edgewater and shit like that. That's kind of more like yuppie places where they give you massages and hot spas and all this other. I may work for some. I don't know. But no, detox is a fundamental place where they got people there that are like, they got nurses, they got doctors, and they got trained staff. And everybody's in there and they detox people on the regular. You can't even bullshit these people. You know what I mean? Like, they're so hip and wise to all our fucking stories and reasons why we need to go outside for a minute that, you know, like, they're there to get you clean, right?
Yeah.
And it's free, but it's limited space and it's not easy to get into. And then even from there, even if you get into detox, everybody knows if you get in detox, that doesn't mean you get to go to stabilization. Then you got to, while you're in detox, get a bed in stabilization so you can go across the hall from detox, which is only 7 days, into stay, which is another 28 days, which you need. Most people aren't even fully gone through the withdrawals after 7 days. They just get you through the worst part, right? And so you got to have that system set up and then a way for them to get off, to wean off. Like if they're not ready to go through the intense withdrawals, maybe some people just want Valium or something to sleep, whatever, right? Like, but it's hard. Or you got to have a space for them to come to, but I mean, people will take off. Like it, you can't help these people, but you got to like offer real help, right?
Yeah, because I think what you're saying is like you'd have to make sure that they are on board for at least 5 days to call in even to get a chance, which I know that, you know, you can't keep track of people that are on that kind of bender, eh?
No, and even keep them wanting to do it, right? Like what I'm saying, like it comes and goes, right? Like you have days where you're like, fuck, I'd clean up right now if I could. I'm so sick right now. I'd be happy to have a bed and detox. And then there's days where you're doing good and you're in party mode again and life is good and you're forgetting all your problems and fucking all your hurts. And then you don't want to, right?
And just going back to Sunny, she sounds like an absolute champ. Like, is she still an outreach worker or what's going on there?
No. So she had a breakdown from it and stuff, right? So she's had to take time off of work. She's been off work now for 2 years. I can't remember the exact amount of time. Year and a half, 2 years. She's been off work and she's actually been, she has people working with her now to help her cope with all of the mental and emotional traumas that she's experienced being an outreach worker, right? And she has two daughters too, right? She's an awesome mom as well, right? She managed to get away from Victoria herself and get her own place with the girls and stuff and just focus on herself and everything. And she's doing really well. Like she's, our friendship is reciprocal. So I always want to try and give back to anyone that's helped me. Like, and that's a for sure. And she helped me so much that as I started to get better and I saw her starting to deteriorate and the consequences of her being an awesome human being and being so emotionally invested in all of us. Like we talk about a lot of the people that's OD'd, like people that I didn't even know and see. And she tells me, yeah, this person's dead. This person's dead. Like she's like, I'm just thinking, fuck, that's more traumatizing. I was just running out getting high and hear about people dying. She was seeing people die, like right in front of her. Like it's nuts. And you get attached to these people because like we come in and out of those drop-in centers daily for like 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. You know what I mean? And we're all funny people. We got jokes. We laugh. We're in there. We share our stories. We're open. We're honest. We got nothing to bullshit about. So the staff take to us, right? Different staff end up liking certain people. You can get away with certain shit. Like, hey, can I have an extra sandwich for the road? And like, yeah, yeah. You know I mean, everyone's got like their favorites and whatnot. And anyways, what's my point? Oh, so all that stuff really, really affected her. And so now she's taking time for herself. I'm doing better. So I also wanted to come up here because I knew I needed to be in a safe place to detox myself and get clean. But I also know she needed help up here financially and mentally and emotionally. And with COVID, she doesn't have anybody, adults in her circle other than this one friend only she sees sometimes. And her daughters, right? And they're both teenagers, right? So she misses just even having an adult conversation. I told her, I said, don't throw that adult word around too much. I'm just a big kid. But and I've got, you know, my own skill sets and I've healed certain things that I can help people, you know, deal with. And so, yeah, me being here now is like I'm actually being able to help her and give back. And she's coming, you know, she's coming back around, if not better, right? So it's a good friendship. Like, it's an awesome friendship.
Was Sunny the same outreach worker that was in the entrance of the hospital when you'd OD'd?
Yeah.
Was it? So she's been through it with you, eh?
Oh, every step of the way. That's what I'm saying, bro. Every step of the way. She's the one that talked me into going to the hospital when my leg was all fucked up. She's the one that helped me get into Vision Quest. Every time I got out, she's the one that would drive me to see a doctor to get on Suboxone, and that would only last like a week, and I'd end up just not going to get it and just doing street dope. Like every step of the way, bro, every step. When I got kicked out of that Vision Quest and ended up on the streets of Kamloops, She was fucking losing her shit. She's like, what the fuck kind of place are you that you kick somebody out in the dead of fucking winter in a place where he doesn't know nobody? You don't even send him back to where he came from. They kicked me out at like fucking 10:30 at night, bro, 4 or 5 days before Christmas. And I could have stayed. I could have snitched out and said, okay, well, it's these guys. But I told, they started trying to work me over. And I kind of had like a leadership role that I assumed there. Not that I wanted to, just guys kind of like me and shit. And so they all were coming to the house and everything to see me. And so they thought first I was the ringleader and I had the dope. And so they pulled me in, they piss test me. And I'm like, fucking, you know, I said, you can search my place. I don't got fuck all. Like, fucking. And when I said, yeah, my piss is dirty, I'll tell you that right now. I don't even got a piss. I smoked a few joints. And I'm like, well, why don't you just give us the stuff? And I said, what stuff, buddy? I don't got no fucking weed. Right now, we see people come to your thing. I said, those are all my friends in here. I said, fuck, I don't know what the fuck. They're just coming to see me and talk to me. So then they said, well, we want to know who's all blah, blah, blah. And that's where I said, okay, whatever. I'm just going to go pack my fucking shit now. And then the main guy that was there, like, he was really taking it personally. I guess they're used to guys coming there. So I don't know what that says about the overall population of the place. And it wasn't like I was being an asshole to them. I just wasn't going to play their fucking game with them. And they already said they're going to kick me out unless I do this. And I was like, well, I'm just going to go pack my stuff then. So I consented to being kicked out, I guess. And they fucking followed through. But they didn't call nobody. They didn't contact Victoria. They didn't call my outreach workers. They didn't call nobody. They just kicked me out and that was it. Forget about it. He's out of here. They're, you know what I mean? There goes our, you know, I was giving them a hard time, right? They were calling the place Vision Quest, and I was pissed because when I got there, one, there was no elder there. Two, the lodge that was there was in shambles. People were sneaking down there to smoke joints in it. Oh, I was so mad. So anyway, so I got things shaped up there and worked out there. And,
And to wrap up the Suboxone thing, so is there kind of a – there's a huge issue here where people being prescribed this stuff and it's setting them up to fail. So this is kind of a system failure, is it? Or is this just one of their main option, or is it driven by trying to sell that drug, or what do you think the issue is there?
Well, it's a temporary fix and it does look successful initially, right? But long term, and doctors and everybody's are starting to become more well aware of the long term consequences of this stuff, and people trying to come off of it, I think it's getting out there more. But like I said, it's not like how much. It's common knowledge, I don't know. But on the surface, they're really pushing it. They're pushing it now in the jails. They're pushing it where now if you go to the hospital, you can never get the doctor to just hook you up with a prescription of Suboxone for 2 weeks and to give you time to go find another doctor to give it to you. Now, like, you go into the hospital for an OD, they're right away they're trying to give you a Suboxone prescription. So I don't know who's pushing it what, but I think it's partly government, it's partly big pharma, like big pharmacy. It's partly just people wanting it, asking for it, you know what I mean? More people getting on it and, you know, at least fixing that part. And it does make you more functional, but when it comes time to getting off, there's going to be consequences. And even while you're on it, the quality of life people are going to have compared to on the streets and overdosing, yes, it's better compared to what it could be. And I'm not talking like grandiose or anything. I'm talking just where you feel connected to the people in your life, your relationships. Bro, I was sitting in my apartment like I was in my cell, fucking just doing my Suboxone every day and only going to work and back to my cell. I was so disconnected from everything. And like the biggest thing I was disconnected to is my sense of, you know, everything. Like just everything I'm in, like the world, creation, like creator, like everything. I just felt so disconnected and numbed out. And then now that I got clean, like it's life is just better. So that's what's going to be missing from a lot of people. And I already know when I go to the meetings. And so when you used to go to meetings, there'd be 3 or 4, maybe out of 20 on methadone. Now you go to meetings, more than half the people in the meetings are all on Suboxone. And we're all talking about sobriety, but all feeling self-conscious and guilty about saying we're sober, because we all know we're not really sober on Suboxone, and how much of the work is being done by the Suboxone, how much of it is us growing and healing and learning to control, you know, the impulses and stuff, right? As another thing, when I came off the Suboxone, I was scared because I was having such bad rituals. Like Sonny, I said, I like fantasized about bumping into somebody I know here just so I can get some dope off them. I says, like, I'm so grateful that I don't fucking know nobody here, and the weather sucks because I kicked right in the, through winter. Like, fuck. So, yeah, Suboxone is definitely being pushed by, I think, multiple different players, and it's warranted. Like, I get it. Like, it got me to here, right? But it was an extremely difficult road, and I'm not trying to say I'm better or stronger or nothing than anybody else, but the determination and the conviction it took for me day after day, week after week, almost like 2 months solid, to every day say, fuck it, I'm going to continue to feel the way I feel, which is the worst I've ever felt in my fucking life, just because I want to feel better and I want to get off this stuff because I just know I have a better life waiting for me.
Yeah, I mean, not many people are going to have, not many people are going to have the opportunity to like detox for 2 months, like in an area where they can't rehab. So it's just, yeah, I mean, it's a head scratcher for me. Like, there's got to be, you know, there's got to be other ways to do it. But I mean, it's kind of a set up to fail kind of process, really, isn't it?
It's just a temporary fix, right? Like, it's literally just a temporary fix. It's the same fix they've been using forever. Change the drug to this and give them this now. Change the drug to this now, give them this now. And you're just passing the addiction on, right?
Yeah.
And also, when I was out there struggling and chasing the dope, there was times where I was sick. There were times where I cleaned up just because I had to. And you know what I mean? When I was on the Suboxone, I had a steady supply, and I was, if anything, I also ingrained my addiction more than I did when I was running around the streets chasing the dope. And I'm not even kidding, bro. Like, I was realizing, I was like, I'm so just simple right now, like dope simple to my Suboxone. And I use it to cope with everything. Like, I knew it was a bad deal, right? Like, I knew that even just coping with my regular emotions, like feeling energized or feeling like I got energy, but I don't know what to do, or feeling bored, or all those things, which seem like minor things, but there, when I was on Suboxone, I never felt any of those things. There was no such thing as bored. I could sit and just stare at fucking the TV guide, never mind the TV shows, while I was on Suboxone, because like, it just makes life content. It still has that same quality that heroin has, morphine has, methadone has, where you're doped up and just everything's all right. Like, it's not the best, but it's all right. Like, that's the headspace, right?
Are other people usually on it for as long as you were on it, or were you on it for quite a long time?
I was only on it for 3 years, and as far as I know, other people have been on it for that long too. And anyone that I know that only went on it for like a month or so and got off, they just went right back to dope. Right. So anyone that I know that's doing well, that's in the meetings, we've all been on it for a long time. Right. And some people talk about coming off, and they'll get to a certain low dose, and next thing you know, they go back up again. And that's the same thing I used to remember with the people in methadone, right? Would say, yeah, I'm getting off this crap. They get to a certain low dose, start feeling crappy, fuck that, and they go back up, right? So you're wired for sound when you're on that shit. Like, you're totally wired to a new substance. That's the switch off. It's one that they can control and dole out, and you seem more functional. So it seems like, oh, well, this is good.
I'd rather make this an episode, if that's all right. Like, talking about this and your battle with Suboxone, because I think it could be a good resource for other people that are in the same situation.
That works for me, bro.
So I don't really feel like talking about funny stories after what we just talked about for the last 50 minutes. if you're open to doing more episodes, obviously, because there's still a few good stories in there that we could tell.
Oh yeah, since my head is cleared up, bro. I've been thinking, fuck, I should have told him about this one. Fuck, I should have told him about this one. So there's some stuff in there still. And I'd like to do one with my bro Pops, Dale Turcotte.
Yeah. I'm open to keeping this thing going. I mean, I think last time when we kind of tapered it down, you know, we're both, and I was getting busy, and then you're going through some stuff as well. So now that we're both, you know, we could do a few more and maybe keep them a bit shorter and pick subjects and keep moving, because you know, I think some of the episodes we had people reach out on Facebook. I probably didn't even tell you, and it's been like, when does his recovery start? Because I want to learn about that and not have to give them the episodes. But, you know, we did the Lifeguard app episode that was quite popular. We talked about that. And this is another one that could be used as a resource as well.
Sounds good. I'm pretty sure we covered the whole fucking deal.
Yeah. And I mean, we can have some episodes where we're telling funny stories. So, yeah, just touch on the guy that we're going to talk to next time.
Yeah.
My can you tell us a bit about him? Yep.
So I already did. If people remember back in one of the episodes, I was talking about racing. And I said we're outside and some new guy came in and wanted to race me. He hadn't seen me race yet. And guys had talked him up and had him convinced he could beat me. And so my friend Dustin is the one that came into the unit, told me, hey, you want to go race and everything? And he's like, I want to bet on you, but I'm worried. He says, this is all I got. And I needed to go get weed and shit. And it was like a few bales, some pop, chips, chocolate bars and shit. And Pops, right, my bro Pops, he was the one that was taking the books. He was the one running the bets. And so we happened to just be behind him when Dustin was asking me this. And I said, Dustin, don't worry about it. I said, I give you my word, I'm going to fucking beat this guy. And Pops overheard, and he looks back, and he says, your word. And so he was like, fuck, so he changing the bets all around. Right? So fucking.
So he's the guy who started Mudfish Money?
No, that's another friend of mine. That's Mark Sutherland. He's on. I made contact with him, too.
So it sounds like a few people reached out and heard the podcast from, you know, people who are involved.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how family, like I reconnected with so much family. But anyways, yeah. my friend Pops, he's really good people. He's been through a lot of the same stuff as me, foster homes, lost his mom shortly after he went into. I don't want to talk too much of a story. I'll let him tell. But he's really good people. He did time with me. We're in prison together. And your bros from inside, bros outside are good friends too. But like, I miss all my bros from inside all the time. I think about them. I wonder how they're doing, if they're out, if they got out, if they're back in. You just spend so much time seeing each other every day, and you just get close to each other. And you're in a place where things can get crazy. Like situations are real, right? So you really got to back each other up when, you know, it's not like just friends of convenience. Oh, he's cool. I don't mind him. Like, these are, you got to be ready to do shit for each other. And he was one of those people, like, he's really solid, good people, right? And so it was really cool that fucking we reconnected and everything. And I was like, fuck, yeah, Pop. He asked me, he's like, you guys ever have guests? And I said, no, but I said, you could come on. And that's why I ran it by you and everything.
Yep.
Because he's one of those people, if you think I got the gift of gab, he's got the gift of gab too. And he's a funny guy. You don't want to piss him off, but he's a funny guy. Yeah,
it's so funny because I thought I had the gift of the gab until I met you, mate. I'll start doing this podcast with you.
Yeah, no, he's good people, and that's what I mean. And everyone loved Pops on the inside, right? Like he was. Like you talk about guys that come inside, and he's one of those guys that everybody knew, and he was just good people, solid people, and yeah. So
nice. Looking forward.
That's my little Pops, and I can't really, talk too much more about him other than just when people catch the next podcast and get to talk with him and hear him talk and share his story. I promise this, it'll be good.
Yeah, nice. It will be good. And that is the end of our episode for today. So next week we get to meet Pops. Don't know much about him. He's a bookie and I love a gamble. So it should be a good time. As you guys noticed today, Gillis is a lot more level-headed, a lot less swearing. I mean, we used to set records for the F-bombs, him and myself, but hey, I hope you guys learnt something today and from his experiences, but a 6-week detox from something sounds horrific, and for people without that support system and, you know, Sunny and people around that, it also about the support workers, outreach workers, like, their jobs are insane. No wonder they burn out. It's just, you'd have to be... Yeah, pretty detached from your feelings to be able to muscle your way through that. So a lot of perspectives in that one. And I just think, I mean, you know, this is just uneducated me saying there's got to be a better way. So anyway, hey, I promise that Bay Street Jump Bridge Jump story will be coming out in one of these episodes. Man, I'm hanging out for that. It was one of the better ones. But anyway, guys, that's where I'll leave you. See you next week when we meet Pops.